Next case, which is case number 7465, Castillo versus State of Nevada. Mr. Anthony, are you going to argue the case today? Or?
Ms. Anderson will be arguing.
Okay, Ms. Anderson, if you come on up, please. On behalf of the appellant, we have Mr. Owens here representing the State of Nevada. And did you want to, now this will be a 20-minute argument on each side. Did you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Thank
four
you.
4 minutes, very well. We'll have a little reminder when you get past 16 minutes on that, so you know you're into your rebuttal time. But you have to reserve at that time. We can't keep the 4 minutes unless you stop then. Okay? With that in mind, would you please proceed?
Nevada is in a group of 9 states that have what this court has called a relatively unique aspect of the capital sentencing scheme. In these 9 states, as a prerequisite to considering the death penalty as an option, the jury must find that mitigating evidence does not outweigh aggravating factors. If it does, then the death penalty is off the table. It's not an option. In almost all of these states, the jury must make this outweighing determination beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's because the U.S. Supreme Court suggested in Apprendi and Ring, and then held explicitly in Hearst, that each finding necessary to impose a sentence of death must be found by the jury beyond a reasonable doubt. This court in Jeremias concluded that Hearst does not require outweighing in Nevada to be done beyond a reasonable doubt. But the briefs and opinion in Hearst don't address some crucial distinctions between the 3-step capital sentencing scheme in this state and the 2-step system in states like Alabama and Kansas. So there are a few aspects of Jeremias that I wanted to address. First, this court in Jeremiah said that outweighing is part of the selection stage and not the eligibility stage, so it does not have to be done by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. This language about the eligibility stage and the selection stage comes from Eighth Amendment cases. Under the Eighth Amendment, the U.S. Supreme Court said there has to be a narrowing of the potential capital defendants, and that happens in the eligibility stage, and individualized consideration of each capital defendant, and that happens in the selection stage. But that classification is irrelevant for purposes of the Sixth Amendment. And the U.S. Supreme Court said that in Ring. The court said a state has some leeway in structuring a system to comply with the Eighth Amendment, but if what the state legislature does is require a prerequisite before the actual sentence decision, then that's an element, that's a fact necessary to impose a sentence of death, and it must be found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. So in Nevada, there are 2 findings that come before the final determination of death worthiness, the finding of an aggravating factor and the outweighing determination. And both those findings need to be done beyond a reasonable doubt under Hearst. And this part of Jeremiah's has an additional problem, which is that it relies on Lyle, which departs from 30 years of precedent in this state and the plain language of the statute, which say that that outweighing is part of the eligibility stage, not the selection stage in Nevada. This court did so in Lyle because this court was trying to keep the actual innocence gateway narrow. And Lyle was an Eighth Amendment case, so it relied on other Eighth Amendment cases. But this court in Jeremiah's significantly expanded this, this holding of Lyle, applied it in the Sixth Amendment case, and in doing so, combined the second and third steps in Nevada. The 30 years of case law from this court and the statutes make it clear that the 3 steps are separate: finding of an aggravating factor, outweighing, and then the final decision on the sentence. Combining the second and third steps conflicts with case law from this court talking about other matter evidence and how that's only relevant in the third step. And also conflicts with this court's holdings that in the third step, even if defendant's mitigating circumstances don't outweigh the aggravating factors, a jury can still decide not to impose the death penalty. So combining that with the outweighing determination writes aspects of the Nevada capital sentencing system out of the statute. As this court continues with that holding of Lyle and Jeremias, then it shouldn't apply that to Mr. Castillo, who was sentenced back when the law was clear in the state that outweighing is part of the eligibility stage and not the selection stage.
How do you distinguish the Clemson case, Clemson versus Mississippi, which is similar as far as the striking of the aggravators? And allowing an appellate court, giving the appellate court discretion to reweigh it on appeal, which, by the way, was done, it looks like, from an order back in 2013 where our justices did reweigh it. How do you distinguish that case with what we're looking at here?
In that case, Apprendi had not come out yet. So the U.S. Supreme Court relied on some statements of law that are no longer valid. The court said that a jury does not need to make any factual findings to impose the death penalty. A judge can do it all. A judge can find aggravating factors, and a judge can impose a death penalty. Ring directly conflicts with that part of Clemens. But Clemens also says that it's up to the state to decide whether to allow reweighing. And there might be state-specific reasons for not allowing reweighing. And in Nevada, there is a reason, and that's the three-step system. So most states have two steps, where the outweighing is the final determination whether somebody deserves the death penalty. In Nevada, that happens in the second step. And allowing reweighing, it's not just allowing a court on appeal to reconsider that final sentencing determination. It's allowing a court on appeal to make the findings necessary to impose a sentence of death.
But taken to its logical end, what you're really proposing here is that when or if this court strikes aggravating circumstances on appeal, that in every case, in that situation, it should go back for a penalty phase for all of the three steps that you're proposing. That would be in every single case. That's what you're proposing.
We're not arguing about harmless error review here. So harmless error review, this court could still conduct harmless error review. The case would go back for a new sentencing hearing if this court concluded, or if this court could not conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that the invalid aggravators affected the jury's determination of the sentence. But if this court could not make that determination, then yes, our argument is that reweighing is in conflict with Hurst, with Ring, and Apprendi, and this court should send those cases back for a new penalty hearing.
But that was already done in 2013 by this court, was it not? As far as on the denial of rehearing, they did look at everything. They found it to be harmless error.
This court used the restated the harmless error standard, but it was tacked on to the end after the reweighing analysis. And it's actually very similar to what the U.S. Supreme Court faced in Clemens. What the U.S. Supreme Court said in that case is it's not enough to just state the standard. If there's no analysis in the opinion about the effect of an invalid aggravating circumstance on the jury's verdict, then it's not a harmless error analysis.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. So are statutory finding the aggravating circumstance beyond a reasonable doubt puts it into the death category? Our weighing process gives it the ability to take it out of death. Isn't it distinguishable from what Apprendi is focusing on, thus suggesting that the weighing doesn't need to be beyond reasonable doubt?
I don't don't think it is. I think it's similar to what some states tried to do with elements of crimes, which is characterize them as affirmative defenses instead of elements, and say that a judge could determine it or a jury could determine it on a standard less severe than beyond a reasonable doubt. And the U.S. Supreme Court said no. So for the Sixth Amendment and sentencing determinations, if it increases the statutory maximum, the U.S. Supreme Court has said it's an element that must be found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's the case whether the state labels it an affirmative defense or a moral determination or a factual determination.
But a weighing process doesn't make you eligible for death. Either you have found, they have to have found an aggravator beyond a reasonable doubt, put you in the death category. It can only knock it out.
That's not what the plain language of the statutes and this court's precedent say. The statutes say that there are two findings necessary to make a defendant eligible for death, and outweighing is included in that. And this court's cases for 30 years said the same thing, interpreting the plain language of the statute.
Mitigators don't even need to be found like unanimously, but like some jurors find some mitigating circumstances present. How does that play into what you're talking about, especially when going into a case, the state has no way of knowing what mitigating circumstances might be presented at trial, and there's no way to know at the pleading stage.
Right. So the reasonable doubt standard doesn't affect the jury's process in weighing the mitigating circumstances that they individually find against the aggravating factors that are proven beyond a reasonable doubt. The reasonable doubt standard just comes in at the end and asks the jurors how confident they are in their conclusion, which is the same way that the reasonable doubt standard is used every day by jurors in determining guilt or in determining elements that aren't pure historic facts about who did what when, stuff like materiality or malice aforethought. Jurors compare the evidence, weigh the evidence from the state against the evidence from the defendant, and come to a conclusion. And if their conclusion is in favor of the government, they just have to be very confident beyond a reasonable doubt in that conclusion.
So, I mean, you're almost saying that in all, because we don't have beyond a reasonable doubt, juries are throwing out death sentences with lightly less than that?
Oh, I'm not sure.
You need those words in order to pronounce death? Pretty weighty. Practically speaking, extremely weighty.
Right now, a juror who thinks that the mitigating evidence is equal to the statutory aggravating factors can impose a death sentence. And what the reasonable doubt standard does, and actually what the dissent said in Mr. Castillo's appeal from the reweighing determination, is that jurors who are sitting in a capital trial are always going to have reasons on the side of imposing a death sentence. And there's usually going to be some pretty strong mitigating circumstances on the other side. But if there's no standard of proof, which is how the system is right now, it's hard to imagine a case where the fact that there is a murder doesn't outweigh a difficult childhood. So the reasonable doubt standard is just going to ensure that jurors who are making that determination are pretty certain that there's something about this murder, this defendant, where this person deserves the death penalty and other people might not.
But finding how the aggravators and mitigators weigh out isn't the same as making a factual finding about whether something happened or didn't happen. So isn't that different than the Apprendi Ring line of cases about factual findings?
Well, it is a different type of factual finding, but what the U.S. Supreme Court said in Gowden is that facts for purposes of the Sixth Amendment can't be limited to just historic facts. That's an unworkable system, is what the U.S. Supreme Court said. So facts for purposes of the Sixth Amendment are anything that is not a pure question of law. In Gowden, the issue was materiality. The U.S. Supreme Court has said the same thing about aggravating factors like danger to the community and heinousness. These all require the jury to make a subjective decision that involves more than just deciding whether something happened at a certain time. And the U.S. Supreme Court said that is what a jury must find under the Sixth Amendment, and under the Due Process Clause, it must be beyond a reasonable doubt.
The point I'm struggling with, and it's a bit different, is how you get past the procedural bars in this case. And I know you're almost out of time, but I would like to hear from you on that.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Castillo can get past the procedural bars because he can show good cause and prejudice. This court has said that good cause exists if an impediment external to the defense prevented a claim from being raised earlier. The impediment here is nunnery. In nunnery, this court said that outweighing, even if it increases the statutory maximum, is not subject to the requirements of the Sixth Amendment and Due Process Clause. That directly conflicts with what Hearst says, which is that each finding necessary to impose a sentence of death must be done by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. So if Mr. Castillo had tried to raise this claim before Hearst, his claim would have been denied because of
nunnery. Nunnery is inconsistent with Apprendi and Ring. I'm troubled by taking Hearst as the line in the sand that licenses this round of argument about nunnery.
Isn't Hearst just applying Apprendi and Ring?
Yeah, exactly.
It's looking at the language of Hearst compared to the language of Ring. It expands on that language dramatically. So Ring, the U.S. Supreme Court explicitly limited it to just the finding of an aggravating factor, and the language in Ring matches that limitation. In Hearst, the court one time uses that narrow language from Ring.
It does.
But if focusing just on that one sentence as the holding of Hearst ignores the rest of the opinion, where the court over and over again uses broader language that encompasses both of the findings in Florida required to get to the decision whether to impose the death penalty. And that's exactly what the Florida Supreme Court said on remand from Hearst. The Florida Supreme Court rejected an argument that Hearst is just an application of Ring in Florida. And the Florida Supreme Court pointed to that broader language talking about both findings in Florida required to move past the preliminary process in capital sentencing proceedings and get to the decision whether to impose the death penalty.
But if we don't credit your argument that Jeremias is incorrect, then that argument fails here, correct?
Right. We are asking for Jeremias to be overruled.
Yeah.
Jeremias didn't address reweighing because Jeremias
right,
was
but neither does Hearst directly.
Right.
Appellate reweighing is not in play.
Yeah, our argument is that because Hearst says each finding necessary to impose a sentence of death must be found by a jury, in Nevada, even if it's not the case in other states, in Nevada, outweighing needs to be done by a jury.
And Jeremiah says that's not so.
Jeremiah doesn't address the reweighing aspect.
Yeah. Okay.
There wasn't an issue there.
Yeah, thank you.
Counsel, I have one more question. Is that all right, Chief?
Yes.
Counsel, in this particular case, though, the jury was misinstructed that they had to find that the aggravators outweighed the mitigators, and that inured to Castillo's benefit. How can we say after that finding that if the jury was, it'd be different? If we do what you're asking, how would that be different? The jury already found the aggravators outweighed. That was incorrect, but inured to his benefit.
The U.S. Supreme Court has said that the reasonable doubt standard is crucial for ensuring accuracy of verdicts. Applied in the in a capital sentencing proceeding?
In general, but to Castillo.
Right.
Who got an instruction that was erroneous, but that was to his benefit, asked the jury to find aggravators outweighed, and they did find that. What's to correct for Castillo?
But there's no way of knowing whether the jury just found by a preponderance of the evidence that the aggravating factors outweighed the mitigating circumstances. They could have been there could have been something that just barely tipped the scale in favor of the government. And the jury did hear a lot of mitigating evidence in this case. The jury found 4 aggravating circumstances, but 2 of them were struck by this court on appeal. And the jury found 3 mitigating circumstances, including the catch-all, which this court said could have included his troubled childhood, his young age, the fact that that he accepted responsibility and cooperated with police. So it could very well be the case that a jury that's properly instructed on the standard of proof would say that this mitigating evidence outweighs the 2 remaining statutory aggravating factors.
Okay, well, thank you. I know we asked you some questions. We'll give you 2 additional minutes in rebuttal, and we'll add 2 minutes to Mr. Owens' time then.
Thank you, Your
Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Steve Owens with the Clark County District Attorney's Office. I really thought this issue was resolved with Jeremias. They even went up on a certiorari petition to the U.S. Supreme Court on Jeremias with the very same argument they're making here, and certiorari was denied. They have to establish good cause to overcome the procedural bars. It's a procedurally barred petition, and yet they're asking this court to overcome those bars and do so by overruling its own precedent. The good cause, they allege, is that Hearst is this intervening case that gives them new law, new precedent that makes available to them an argument that was not previously available. Now, Castillo may not have raised this issue until Hearst came out, but many other defendants have raised this issue. This court has dealt with this issue repeatedly in all the cases that are there in the brief. Defendants have been making this argument. Hearst didn't give them any new grounds to do so. Hearst doesn't get them where they need to. It's in this case here that they want that ruling that will now establish new precedent for everyone else who's ever been sentenced to death in Nevada to make a challenge to their death sentence and say, hey, my jury wasn't instructed that they needed to find the weighing beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the missing link between Hearst and Nevada jurisprudence. They're asking this court in a procedurally barred petition to create new law here in Nevada.
And so that would overturn every single death penalty case in the state of Nevada?
I hesitate to say that, but that's certainly where they're headed. And I would certainly be trying to
re-instruct on reasonable doubt requirements.
I would make some creative arguments to try to salvage those, but that's where they're headed, is to undermine every single death sentence because we don't instruct beyond a reasonable doubt on the weighing here in Nevada. Hearst, I just fundamentally disagree with their interpretation of Hearst. I think they're extending it farther than the court did. The court, yes, changes capital jurisprudence. The U.S. Supreme Court does, and they modify their past opinions. But it seems like they're leapfrogging. They're going down the road anticipating where the court might go. Maybe the court will go there in a few more years. Maybe not. Maybe they've gone far enough in their Sixth Amendment jurisprudence, and they're going to pull back a little. I don't think we should anticipate the repercussions of Hearst. It's been out for 3 years now. We haven't seen the kind of consequences that you would expect if Hearst really meant what they said it means. And so I'm arguing stare decisis. Let's not go back and revisit the same law. Justice Hardesty, in the last oral argument, you said, how many times are we going to keep looking at the same statute? Well, when it comes to weighing beyond a reasonable, the reasonable doubt applying to the weighing process, we've looked at that statute ad nauseum, whole line of cases. I don't think in a procedurally barred habeas petition is the place to make new law. If this court wanted to, it should do it in a direct appeal, not in this particular posture. Our statutes, they don't talk in terms of eligibility and selection. That is Eighth Amendment jurisprudence, but the legislature didn't use those terms. The legislature said it's necessary to impose the death penalty, that you must find an aggravating circumstance, and that there's no mitigating circumstances sufficient to outweigh the aggravating. Nevada is unique, but we're not so unique that weighing now becomes an eligibility factor, or under the Sixth Amendment that it becomes a new fact that increases the range of punishment like an aggravator. It's easy to see how an aggravating circumstance is a quasi-element of a greater offense. We allege those aggravating circumstances in a notice of intent to seek the death penalty, a notice of aggravating circumstances, and then we set out to prove those beyond a reasonable doubt, very much like a new offense. But weighing is part of this discretionary function. And I agree with Justice Stiglitz. It's a way to remove you from death, from the death penalty. The Nevada legislature, the way it's written, would suggest that they're looking to allow the jury multiple opportunities to extend mercy to a defendant. They never feel obligated to impose the death penalty. You can always extend mercy for whatever reason and knock them out of the process at any point along there. It's not a finding of fact. That's what this court's jurisprudence has previously found. Regardless of what whether you, for Eighth Amendment purposes, you call it eligibility or selection. And I clearly think it's selection, as Lyle said. But it's not a finding of fact. It's this intangible weighing. And yes, we do have to, the appellant has accused this court of muddling Sixth Amendment and Eighth Amendment jurisprudence. But the U.S. Supreme Court, in Ring, discussing Sixth Amendment, they bring up eligibility in Eighth Amendment term. They are somewhat interrelated, and that's because aggravating circumstances and mitigating circumstances in weighing only exist because of Eighth Amendment jurisprudence. The U.S. Supreme Court said we have to have those in there to narrow the class of individuals eligible to receive the death penalty and to provide that individualized sentencing discretion. And so, to find out for Sixth Amendment purposes whether either one of those is a fact that increases the penalty and renders somebody eligible for a greater penalty than what was based on the jury's findings, you have to go back to what is the purpose of those things. And you can see how narrowing the category of murderers, first-degree murderers, eligible to receive the death penalty, that eligibility finding, you can see how that's an additional fact. It increases the range of penalty for those people. But weighing, when you look at it in Eighth Amendment terms, we're talking about selection. Weighing these intangible factors of mercy and balancing them each individually in each juror's mind. Some might agree one thing is a mitigator, others may agree something else is. And they each individually have to reach this conclusion that there's no mitigating circumstances, including mercy, sufficient to outweigh the aggravating circumstances. That's not the same thing as establishing a fact that elevates somebody to the death penalty. Weighing states, every jurisdiction has to conduct the weighing in order to impose the death penalty. That's what the Nevada legislature speaks of as imposing. Just because something is necessary to impose a death sentence does not mean that it is an eligibility factor or that it is a fact that increases the range of punishment. And every jurisdiction, weighing or not weighing, has to consider mitigating circumstances. That somehow doesn't render that, just because it's a necessity, it's required to impose the death penalty, doesn't mean that it's an eligibility factor or that it's a fact that increases the punishment under the Sixth Amendment. And I think that's where this court, in using the term eligibility somewhat loosely in some of its opinions, has given the appellant some room to kind of argue that you changed the law. I think this court, I believe it was in Lyle, came out and explained when we previously used this term eligibility, we were using it in a different sense than maybe the U.S. Supreme Court did. And we were referring more to the statutory law. It's an eligibility factor in that it must be conducted before you can impose the death penalty. So I don't see Hearst as really doing anything more than applying Ring to Florida law. Florida law.
What about in the appellate reweighing setting? Does Hearst cast doubt on the proposition? And I, the procedural bars in this case are very troubling to me, but in general, does Hearst cast doubt on the proposition that if you subtract two of the aggravators that the jury found leave to, and then this court goes ahead and reweighs and still imposes it, it looks close to the Florida scheme analytically to me in that we're treating the jury's verdict as sort of advisory because two of the four aggravators have been removed.
Well, we need to
And that has always troubled me. I'd like to get your views on that.
We need to distinguish Hearst was...
I understand it doesn't talk about appellate reweighing.
It talked about judicial fact-finding, and that was in the imposition of the death sentence in the district court in the first instance.
Yes.
Hearst does not talk about, and I think it's something entirely different to talk about appellate review, when a court reviews the findings of fact that a jury has already made.
Right, but when we remove,
an aggravator, one or more aggravators, are we not at that point, as an appellate judge, judicially determining death?
Well, this court has repeatedly...
I understand our precedent. It's an honest intellectual question.
Yeah, well, and I don't like the term re-weighing because it can bring some confusion in. It suggests things that this court really hasn't done and isn't doing. You compared it to harmless error. The appellant thinks those are two very different things. I think they're very, very similar, and that's what this court has said. You can do re-weighing or harmless error, which really are the same sort of thing.
Harmless error I put in a separate category, but you're saying that you would cast appellate re-weighing as the same as a harmless constitutional harmless error analysis?
I believe that is what this court has said in its past jurisprudence. In this case here, the re-weighing that took place that they have a problem with is this order denying petition for rehearing in 2012, 2013, where it conducted this McConnell analysis.
Right.
And that was within the context of an actual innocence claim, not on a, this wasn't a direct appeal, it's a procedurally barred petition. So for McConnell purposes, can they meet actual innocence? And this court mentioned both re-weighing or harmless error. But if you go read that order denying rehearing, I see the court's analysis as being harmless error. It didn't say, we the court find this. We the court are making judicial findings about this and this. They said, this court said, we find that the jury still would have done this. And that is an appellate review function. In fact, in that case, I believe it was the Federal Public Defender's Office, at that point in time in this case, asked this court to consider new mitigation evidence. And this court said no, because that would be judicial fact-finding. We don't do that on appeal. Re-weighing is limited to the findings of fact that the jury made. And so, with re-weighing defined that way, I think it's really a harmless error analysis, which even Hearst, the U.S. Supreme Court in Hearst, remanded that for harmless error analysis. And as long as this court continues to apply it in a harmless error way, I don't know that the label, what you call it, really matters. That's how I see the analysis as being one of harmless error. I don't think this court's reimposing the death penalty. You're making the same decisions you make in every other appeal about error. Is it harmless beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yeah. Thank you.
On retroactivity, this simply comes back to their interpretation of what Hearst did. If Hearst is an application of Ring, which that's exactly what this court said it was in Jeremias, then we know that it's not retroactive because the U.S. Supreme Court always said Ring is not retroactive. The appellant is focusing not on who is the fact finder issue. That's what was at issue in Hearst, and that's what the Sixth Amendment is about, the right to a jury trial. They're looking at the other part of it, which is really a due process issue, not particularly Sixth Amendment. And that's why Eighth Amendment jurisprudence also comes into play, because the beyond a reasonable doubt standard is due process. And whether it's Sixth Amendment or Eighth Amendment that we're talking about now, weighing in, it doesn't matter, because it's the due process that gives us that standard of beyond a reasonable doubt. And so if you're saying that Hearst really imposed this new beyond a reasonable doubt standard, that's got to be under the due process clause, and that's how they're saying that it is retroactive, because beyond a reasonable doubt has been held to be retroactive. And so if you stay with the interpretation that you've already given Hearst, I think as a matter of law, it is not retroactive. And so Hearst, in my opinion, is not good cause to overcome these procedural bars. It simply doesn't get them where they need to go. They have to have this court take an additional step before they can, and they need this court to kind of sabotage our jurisprudence here in Nevada and say that weighing is really an eligibility factor that increases the penalty the same as an aggravating circumstance. If you were to say that, and that, I believe, is a matter of state law, if you were to say that, then that would give room for the U.S. Supreme Court to come in and say, well, now defined as such, now you have to apply the reasonable doubt standard. You have to apply all this other stuff. So That's the ruling they need from you. That's the ruling they've been trying to get year after year after year. I keep bringing up this this issue. The U.S. Supreme Court is not there yet, so let's not have this court reach an issue that we're not under some precedent by the U.S. Supreme Court to reach. Like I said, they may back away from Sixth Amendment jurisprudence. They may have gone as far as they want to. So far, it's only gone to aggravating circumstances. And that is not so unique that we need to go out on a limb and say, yeah, but even though the U.S. Supreme Court hasn't gone beyond aggravating circumstances, we think our weighing is so different than any other jurisdiction out there that it should be treated as a quasi-element of a greater offense. I believe that's all the points I have, so I will, unless there are other questions.
Any questions from the justices, from Mr. Owens? Okay, thank you, Mr. Owens.
Thank you.
Okay, and counsel has about 2 minutes left, so you may proceed. No?
All right. There are just a couple points that I wanted to respond to. So the state argues that this court would have to expand Hearst to accept this argument, but Hearst says two things that are directly applicable here. First, that each fact necessary to impose a sentence of death is an element under Apprendi, and second, that the Sixth Amendment, in conjunction with the Due Process Clause, requires elements to be found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. Because in Nevada, the outweighing determination is a finding necessary to impose a sentence of death. It falls under that without having to expand Hearst. And that's what the Florida Supreme Court said. There is an additional interpretation of Hearst that it applies to the ultimate step, the sentence selection step. That's what Delaware said. But that's not the question we're asking this court. The question we're asking this court is an easier question, which is, whether outweighing in Nevada, because it is a fact necessary to impose a sentence of death, must be found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. The state also argued that that Hearst is not retroactive unless this court expands Hearst to also mandate a standard beyond a reasonable doubt. Hearst says explicitly, Sixth Amendment, in conjunction with the Due Process Clause, requires a standard of beyond a reasonable doubt. And Hearst relies on a long line of Sixth Amendment cases saying the exact same thing. Starting in Sullivan, the U.S. Supreme Court said, if the Sixth Amendment requires a finding by the jury, then that finding has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And then finally, the distinction between reweighing and harmless error review, there's a very clear distinction, and that's where the focus of the court is. Harmless error focuses on the jury's verdict, while reweighing focuses on the justice's ideas about the mitigating evidence and aggravating factors.
Thank you very much. And again, thank both counsel for excellent arguments today. We appreciate it, and we will take this case under submission. We'll be in recess.